welcome to the other 167.
Kenny Lewis, Pastor Ben Pierce, Garrett Leo.
I was asked Sunday morning to tell us what the show's about. The point? And I never know the answer to that. I don't know what the point is.
Just like my sermons. Well, we're talking about how you go about living this life, the other 167 hours in the week.
How do you live it out?
Doug had asked me what we're going to talk about today, and I said, well, this is one of the questions that I have. It's not a criticism. I was just curious why we don't preach out of the old more. I understand why we don't preach. If I were going to, I think we've even said this before, gospel's absolutely focal point. Right. Totally get that. Then New Testament over Old Testament, I totally get that. But I'm not sure that I can recall off the top of my head a sermon I've ever heard off of the Old Testament, right, rather than you reference it, the Old Testament, a lot in your right sermons, like you said. And it wasn't a criticism as much as a question as why is that? Because it's,
I think there's a couple of reasons. I think number one is for where we are as far as the 21st century, you know, and think about what Sunday morning is. And again, Sunday morning is your prime time. That's what you get probably judged on the most. And then mm-hmm. you come back on Wednesday nights, Sunday nights. That's when you do some of those obscure books or books mm-hmm. that might be. I think one of the things is, there's a couple things there. One is your Old Testament. Like, for instance, I'm doing Christ in the Old Testament. So we're looking at some of the feasts and how Christ is pictured there. Well, a 30-minute sermon out of that, sometimes it's difficult. Mm-hmm. Versus, I got Christ on Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Mm-hmm. I think the other thing is, for the 21st century biblical illiterate, or maybe Old Testament illiterate, so much time has to be spent explaining, trying to tell what it is, who the Jewish people are, all that good thing. So I think, and then on top of that, think about this, the New Testament lends itself to teaching. Mm-hmm. And I think the Old Testament did too, but I think it was more of the reading than it was the teaching, where the New Testament, when you got Paul talking about, put on Christ, when you got Paul talking about crucified with Christ, well, man, let's dive into that, because that's really what it's about. And it's kind of the Old Testament leading up to the New, with the New being, okay, this is what we're under. So I think that's why you hear more sermons on the New than you do the Old.
Well, for example, for me, in Isaiah, I guess the notes in the Bible here say chapters 49 through 57 are focusing on the Messiah.
Right, right.
And it's easy to forget when you're reading through that this book was written, 900 years before Christ was born?
Yeah, Isaiah would have been, 700.
Yeah, 700. So it's explaining and describing Christ with vivid accuracy.
Correct.
700 years early, and you're reading those chapters, and it feels like that section would fit in the New Testament, right?
Right.
And it's there's a lot of good stuff in there, and I understand. I think once I've completed the entire Bible, it'll be kind of interesting to see where I spend most of my time. I think I will spend most of my time studying Gospels probably first,
right,
New Testament second, and then Old Testament maybe is I don't want to say filler, but there's a lot of stuff in the Old Testament I'd like to go back and...
Oh, yeah, and I think, and there's so much. And that's why I like the little video series on the kings. Mm-hmm. After David, Solomon, and Saul, usually people can name maybe three more. Mm-hmm. And they're the big ones, an Ahab. They may remember a Josiah from Sunday school class. But a lot of them, after that, you start naming... If you can name me 10, you're doing well for the most person. If I went up to the average person and said, can you name me 10 kings from Israel's history? Most people are going to, they might, if they've been in Sunday school their whole life, they can get 10.
Reese quizzed me last night. She said, can you name every book in the Bible? And I thought, I can get pretty close, I think. I said, I don't think I can name them all, but I'm pretty sure I can probably get, just guessing, 60 out of 66. And she said, well, start doing it. I said, well, I think I'll probably be better in the New Testament. And I said, I think I can get all of the New Testament. And I started rolling. I think I got like 21 out of 27.
Right, so you got 27.
And then I said, let me adjust my number. I don't think I got 60 overall. But I started thinking about it. After you get through, I guess, Jeremiah, and you start getting into the minor prophets, there's a lot of minor prophet books.
12,
yeah. So I couldn't name all of those. Are probably close to it.
I had to. It was funny. I took a class on the minor prophets. It was a great class. One of the best classes I had in seminary. It really was. And we looked at each one of those and dived into them. And one of the last questions was, name all 12. And that was great. I was kind of like, oh, okay. That's pretty cool, because hadn't thought about it. memorizing Obadiah and Joel and Amos and Habakkuk, Hosea. You know, you got Malachi, you got Micah. Nahum. Obadiah. I'll give you the 12. I don't know about the order.
I know Malachi's last.
If you let me sing the song, that's how I memorize it.
I was going to say.
Genesis.
That's what Reese was doing yesterday. That's what she was doing. She was singing it.
Sing the songs, I can get you all 66. But now New Testament is one or two of those little books like to hide on you when you're looking for them.
Yeah.
Philemon. Things like that.
So if Reese has got to memorize a verse a week or whatever, so she's Daddy quiz me on my verse because that's part of the homework. You can hear her going through the definition of vain repetition, right? Like she has absolutely no idea what she's saying. No. She's just
getting the words, man. Just hide them.
That's what she's got to do right now. That's what she's got to do right now for this.
Well, and you're hoping that it gets hidden in her heart.
Absolutely.
And it'll take root. Believe me, I did a lot of the same.
Yeah.
From first through 12th grade, and it's amazing. Well, it's amazing what you can remember.
Yeah. The Sermon Sunday.
It's a great text. Yeah, great parable. I had more fun putting that together.
I love really two things. I love the story you told about the Delta Airline pilots in Northwest. I thought that was a really, really good illustration of what we get wrong a lot of times. Yeah,
well,
the way we do
the focus. We get the focus on the wrong things.
Yeah.
And, it's very easy to do that when we've been charged with something that is of utmost importance.
Yeah.
And but we get caught up. I mean, it happens to anybody. It can be a pastor. It can be a average Christian, or it doesn't matter. We can sometimes get so caught up into petty stuff that we miss what's important.
Yeah.
Sometimes. All the time, man.
Yeah. Keep the main thing the main thing, man. Yeah.
That's a great little line that I've heard you say a few times, and it's a great one just to kind of have in your back pocket. Keep the main thing, because that's something that we – once in a while, I'm getting aggravated about something, or I'm getting whatever. It's just a good time to remind myself, is this the main thing to worry about?
Yeah, is this really important? Isn't it?
Yeah.
And I used to have a secretary that was great. I loved her to death. She was one of the sweetest little ladies. But her saying was, if something didn't go right, in light of eternity, no big deal. And I used to love that.
The other thing you went through, I wanted to talk about a little bit today, or expand on a little bit, were the distorted views of God.
Oh, okay.
And that was something that I thought... Man, that's a great little. You hit four different examples, and I think. Do you think that those four is that an exhaustive list? The four that you went over, or do you think there's some more?
No, I think there's some more. I included those because I thought to myself, that's probably the some reason or another we're talking about a lot of lists today. That's probably your top four.
Yeah,
I'm sure there's plenty of others. But I can kind of, docile, meaning he's permissive, he doesn't care, do whatever I want to do, then I'm just going to live my life whatever. I'm not going to have to answer to him.
Well, and that one's kind of in response to grace and saying, God's gracious and forgives me, so I can do whatever I want to do, and he's still going to, he's fine.
Yeah,
he's fine.
Paul talks about that. Should we keep sinning because grace abounds? Heaven forbid. That perish the thought.
Yeah.
I think one of the things... And I'll give a plug for it now. Doug's got a discipleship training class coming out. It's actually going to be taught by Steve Fudge on Wednesday nights here at the church. And it is basically, I think it's actually called, he told me today, he said, my class is called Distorted Views of God. And I said, you kidding me? I said, man, I could have made a perfect plug right there. I just didn't think about it. He said, well, I thought you were doing it, and that would help folks to, as they read it, to sign up. And I think it's very important. But at the same time, as I went home and I thought about it, I said, is that right? Because Jonah had a distorted view of God, but it was also he had the right view of God. Because he said, I know you. You're compassionate. You're forgiving. You'll forgive those Ninevites. That's why I didn't want to go. I mean, that's more of a, he had a whole distorted heart and everything else. So it's not always, but it does lead into, if you got a distorted view of God, you'll have distorted living.
Well, do you think everybody has a distorted view? I'm thinking about Jonah.
Well, I think that's why it's so important that you draw your view of God from the scriptures.
I mean, that's one of the reasons. Sometimes it might get a little distorted.
Sure it is.
When you start looking at Revelation, you're trying to figure out how that is. I mean, right. I think that's a little...
Well, I think that's one of the reasons I think the book of Psalms is so important, or the Psalms. And one of the reasons I wanted to do this study is, man, you go through the Psalm, you'll see real quick, God is a close God. He's a personal God. He's a big God. He's all those things that he is, but he's also a holy God.
Well, I don't mean that. a distorted view of God in a bad way. I mean, it's probably that we just don't know everything.
Well, and I don't think you can know everything.
How is a great white throne judgment?
Right.
God,
right.
But we know God.
But what I'm talking about, is just the character of God. And so here's the thing. I take what you just said, great white throne judgment, and I just see God as being critical and judging everything I do. Yeah. And I can't do nothing right. So he's either a demeaning God, a demanding God, or he has got a golden combat boot ready to squash me because I just screwed up. Those kind of things distort how you see God, right. and then that's going to distort how you live. Mm-hmm. Because now I'm living out of fear. And that's what the third servant did. You're a harsh man. You reap where you don't sow, and you expect me to just make coins out of thin air. And therefore, I hid it in a tissue. Well, good gracious, man. I'm telling you, having that distorted, I see God as being vengeful and ugly and mean and, wrath, yep. Which he is holy, and he's going to demand. That's he's got standards. Yes. And I think that's one of the things, and I probably didn't do a good enough job on it, is all those views that I mentioned, there's a little kernel of truth to some of it. Mm-hmm. Is he docile in the fact that he's merciful and gracious? Sure.
Yes.
At the same time, he's not all the way to where now I can get away with whatever I want to do. And I'm not going to have to answer for what I do.
So the four that you listed on Sunday were
right.
Authoritative or mean.
Right.
Docile, which is I can do whatever
passive.
I want to do.
And yeah, he's let go of the world.
Demanding or hard to please.
Critical.
And then the fourth one you said was a distant God who doesn't really care about us. As
He basically formed the world as y'all are at it, at it.
Yeah. And I think of those.
And there were four Ds. I can't remember what was the D I used for the first one.
Demanded. I don't know.
What I did was I gave the four D's, then kind of told a little bit of what I mean by that.
And I may have been paraphrasing. I may have.
You got the four though.
Yeah. I don't know what you use for authoritative or mean. Dictator maybe would have made sense.
Dictatorial.
That would have been why I wrote authoritative instead of I can't spell dictatorial.
Dictator. There are a lot of Christians that they know God's going to be in the end. He's the head of everything, but. They're not sure that he's, or they don't believe that he's in every detail of their lives.
Right. Created the world, going to rule it then, but as far as your everyday stuff.
Yeah. Mm. But we know that everything works out, but is he really into my everyday?
Right. So he's distant.
Every hour, every second.
Yep. So if you have that view and you really believe it, then you're not going to refer to him. You're just going to live your life.
Right.
Without any kind of, Proverbs 3, 5, and 6 has no meaning for you.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just going to lean on my own understanding. Why would I have to worry about him? He's distant.
Well, what are some of the scriptures that show that God is in your everyday, every detail? Romans 8:28.
James 4:8. Draw near to God and he'll draw near to you. So he is near. I think the whole Bible kind of points to that in a way. I mean, really, if you stop and think about it, the book of Psalms. I mean, look, Psalm is nothing more than a hymn book, or sometimes it's a prayer book. So you can learn how to pray by reading the book of Psalms. But David's crying out. He's been ran off the throne by his own son, and he cries out, God, you're my only hope. You're my rock. You're my defense. So to me, that says, he's near. That's why it's so important that you get your view of God from the scriptures and not just what somebody's told you or really from your own experience. Because, I want to know from the truth, because what we do is we take our experiences and we try to shape the scriptures to meet our experiences. Now, you take the truth, and then you shape your experiences.
I don't know.
Backwards.
A lot of times we get it backwards.
I get it backwards sometimes.
Yeah, we all. I mean, there's a lot of things we get backwards.
Yeah.
So I wrote down in the margins over here as a contrast, I guess, the counter to each of the four you listed.
Right,
authoritative or mean, I put loving to counter that.
Right.
Docile, doesn't care what I do, I wrote guiding to counter that. Demanding or hard to please, I put it as the counter there, patient.
And kind,
And kind. And then distant, doesn't care, I just put personal.
He's near and personal,
So if you, and again, I think there's a lot of different distorted views, and I've had a lot of them, I think, and clearing up some of those distorted views through just reading the scripture has definitely changed the way I see God, my relationship with God, and it filtered into, you talk about him being distant, I'm thinking he ain't distant, he sticks his nose in places I don't understand why he's got it there, but all right. He bugs me about all kinds of stuff that I don't think matter.
But it changes, it really does change how you live, the way you view God. In fact, I think it's J.I. Packer, great theologian, I love his books, and he said the most important thing about a person is their opinion or their description or their beliefs about God. That's going to determine how you live.
Some of your distorted views are contradictory, and it's interesting. Authoritative is almost the opposite of docile,
right.
I suppose. Yeah. To some extent, docile goes hand in hand with distant. I suppose that he's distant.
It kind of is. I mean, they are. I mean,
definitely the opposite of demanding.
Think about it. We as humans, and I think we've kind of hit on this through the years. Yeah. We don't tend to go for we either are on this extreme or this extreme, and we tend to always take it to those extremes when the truth may somewhere be in the middle. Is God going to judge? Yes. So he has standards. He's righteous. He demands perfection, but is he also merciful? Yeah, so the truth is right there in the middle. Mm-hmm. He's not so merciful that you can just get away and everybody's going to be forgiven scot-free, but he's also not someone who's going to send everybody to hell. He has sent his son, which is in the middle. And that's where I think at the cross you have so many things meeting. You have his love, but you have also his hate for sin. You have his holiness, but you also have his mercy. Mm-hmm. You have so many things meeting right there at Christ that's why the wonder of the cross just blows me away. That is the punishment of sin, but it's also him taking it for me.
Well, you also have his power at the cross too.
Sure.
Which is something that
And you see Christ at his weakest.
Right.
I mean, you could submit that. But also I could say that's at his strongest too. But
Well, Christ at his weakest and meekest and most humble, but then at the same time, the resurrection is my God can do anything he
demonstrated
wants to do,
with power.
Right? Yeah. And that's something that I think is, when we talked, one of the early shows, I talked about, maybe the very first show, about having a fear for God and God fearing, and I never maybe had enough fear, so to speak, of God or reverence for God. And it's not a scared to death that he's going to strike me dead if I do something I shouldn't do, but it is acknowledging that he can,
right?
That he has that power.
Sure.
But also understanding that in his love for us, and I'm not trying to make this a prosperity gospel type thing where you can do anything, but through that power, anything you think you can't get through, his power will get you through it. Anything you think you can't do that he calls you to do, you can do it.
So
that same God that can, I mean, I don't know how many times I heard something the other day, if you hear something repeated enough times in a book, it's important.
Right.
And I don't know how many times in Isaiah he talks about stretching the heavens. I stretch the heavens.
Yeah. I weighed the mountains in my hand.
Right.
On, man, that's a big God.
But knowing that the same one that does all this isn't distant. Yes, he is somewhat demanding because he does care about what you're going to do.
He's got a standard.
He has standards. But he's also very patient in that. I had a good, bad experience last night with Gabe where he didn't have a ton of homework, and I was being kind of patient and kind of working, getting it checked off. But it gets to the end of the night, and he just got sloppy and lazy. He took 45 minutes in the shower, and he's just goofing off. And next thing I know, it's bedtime, and we hadn't finished.
Wow.
We were mostly done. And I've about flipped on him for a second there, and I sometimes have to be that way with him because that's what gets his attention and leaves a mark. I also have to turn around 5 to 10 minutes later and make sure that I calm him down before bed because he's very tenderhearted. I don't want him to go into bed thinking I hate him or anything like that. But you got to crack whip. And God knows us.
And there's a way to be stern without being ugly.
There is.
Hey, man, it's time to get serious. Time to get you. Because, look, I've got a 21-year-old that sometimes I have to say, right, 45 minutes in the shower.
Yeah.
I told him, I said, you're the best dilly-dally I ever met in my life, dilly-dallier. Because he can dilly-dally, and I'm just not a dilly-dally. I don't know where he gets that from, but it kills me. And I'm like, dude, that's why I love you so. You're so much different than me.
Yeah. Well, I had to tell him, I took at the end of it, kind of explained, look, the reason that I'm doing this is because you wasted 45 minutes trying to save 15 in homework. You're speeding through the homework.
That's right.
Where if you would have just taken 10 minutes and done it right the first time, we'd have saved 45 minutes correcting it. So there's a purpose behind this
Take your time, do it right, but stay on the move.
Right. But I think that's something that God's shown me a lot with it, is that, yes, sometimes I need to be tough because this is important and you need to get it.
Yeah, exactly.
And other times it's, yes, I know you're trying your best and it's not good enough, but that's okay. We'll work on it. You know, there's a that balance that you said. It's both, because he knows his people.
Well,
that's
and
what we need.
And I think one of the things, and that's that fear we talked about. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things, and I went back home and rewatched the sermon, and I thought to myself, boy, I missed another one there. I'm telling you, I missed so much Sunday, it's pitiful. But fear, there's two types of fear. I did hit that part. Two types of fear in the Bible, because over and over again, 365 times, you're told in the Bible, fear not. So fear, we shouldn't have fear. But then Proverbs 1:7, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. So yes, there's that fear of God, but then there's that fear not. So I believe there are two types of fear that the Bible talks about. There's the kind of fear that's either going to cripple you, and that's what the third servant was it crippled him. He took the manah and just went and hid it or wrapped it up in a cloth. But then there's another fear that compels you, and that compels is a picture of being pushed down the lane, like a bowling ball being released down the lane, and it controls us. It pushes us towards the pins. When we were teaching the youngins how to bowl, you put those gutters up. You can hit those gutters 45 times and still get a strike if you do it right, you know, or at least 3 or 4 times and still get a strike. Well, that's because it compels it. It's pushing. It's guiding it. It's like the love of God just continues to push us towards the goal. And so there's a fear that's good, but then there's a fear that cripples.
Yeah.
So a compel or a cripple, which one are we walking in? And the fear of God says, my God can do it, can do all things.
It was interesting. You pointed out that this is not the same parable as parable of the talents. And I literally just read Luke 19 right before the sermon, not in preparation for the sermon. It just so happens last thing I read in Luke was that chapter. And I had thought it was the same parable.
No, numerous people do
you,
that.
And you pointed out some key distinctions between. I was like, oh yeah, I see that now. But I thought it was just a different version of the parable of the talents.
Exactly. And there are numerous people. I mean, I can't tell you the number of times that even growing up, I thought it was the same.
He's at a different location, isn't he?
Well, it's a whole different story.
Yeah.
Really, it is. It very similar story, but a whole different story as far as, and I think the biggest thing for me is, okay, so each person, each servant got the same amount versus the talents. They started out with different amounts. Everybody gets the same amount. Well, that's why I said that I believe that is the gospel. We have been entrusted with the gospel. And I believe that's what he's getting at there. What are you going to do with, and you could even maybe even make the argument that it's the kingdom. What are you going to do with the kingdom? Or are you going to make it count for the kingdom? Are you going to do, you know, and the thing of it is, the manah is earned. Each one of those servants said, your manah has turned 10. Your manah has turned 5. It wasn't, oh, I'm a financial wizard and I invested in Apple at the right time. It was, no, your manah. So that is, the manah had power. And it was his resources and his strength that did it. So that's why I came away with, no, I believe what has every Christian been given and trusted with that is the same amount. Whether you're Paul, Billy Graham, me, you, who we've all been given. Well, we've been entrusted with the gospel.
Right. I mean, that's said 5 times.
Yeah.
Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, and Acts.
And 2 Timothy 2.
Okay, yeah.
Good. I've been entrusted with the gospel. Yeah. I'm not ashamed of the gospel, for it's the power of God unto salvation.
There's two different examples I thought of two different points from all that. I liked the way you seemed, and I think very, very rightfully so, a big focal point for you lately, if not always, has been, let's be really, really crystal clear that we're not saying works get you into heaven. I feel like that's a key point in a lot of ways.
I think that has to be stressed and it's easy to come away from something like that and realize, I could, you know, if all I had about the gospel was that parable, okay, that's a works-based salvation then, isn't it?
Yeah. The way I put it, though, I think it, in my notes, summing up kind of what you had said about it, is the works don't get you the manah.
Right.
The works are what you do with the manah that you've been given with that gift. And I think that's you can't do anything to earn the opportunity for him to give you the manah so that you can do it.
It's by faith that you're a servant.
Right.
I don't
know how many times when I was an advisor, I hated this. It never worked out when they did it, but somebody would always come to me and say, you know, I got a bunch of money, I'm gonna give you $50,000 and see what you do with it, and then if you do good, I'll give you more. Right. And I hated when they did that. It was always the kiss of death, because the next 6-8 months would be terrible as soon as they did that. But that happened a lot in the investment world. You know, we're gonna try you out with a little small amount, and if you do well, we'll give you more. Well, an analogy might break down on the fact that if you have a good reputation as an advisor or something like that, that might give you the opportunity or whatever. But for the most, but it's not your money that you're getting. You're getting an opportunity to do something with somebody else's. It doesn't matter how good you do, they ain't going to give you the $50,000 at the end of it.
No, it's
right. It's theirs. But then, you know, well, I don't know. It's all over the Gospels, but the passage, if those who have will be given more, and those who don't have, even what they have will be taken away.
It's in that passage, verse 26, because they were fussing.
Yeah.
Why does he get 10? You know, why does he get 10 cities?
Yeah, and that makes a lot of sense from a practical standpoint. It's not necessarily, it can be, I guess, but it's not necessarily talking about material things and that. But if you have been given an opportunity to share it, and you do it, and it's and you're eagerly sharing it, then you are going to get more opportunities to do more. If you're sitting hiding it in a handkerchief, then even the opportunities you have are gonna slip, and you're not going to get more of them. I mean,
and the rewards are going to come. Oftentimes, that's what laying up for yourselves treasures in heaven.
Do you think it's not to try to turn the parable into more complex, you know, complex than it's supposed to be, or ever read into it. But what you've said a lot of times, eternal living is here and now also.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I can make a case for those opportunities, like Kenny talks about wanting to help people and that joy that you get from helping people and from doing things for the kingdom. That is kind of here and now, too, getting more opportunities to see more of that and to be a part of more of that type of work.
Sure, and I think...
Well, that's the works part.
Right.
The worst comes after salvation, because, you know, you want to do that kind of stuff. Yeah.
And I think one of the things, too, that goes along with that, and I think it's always important to remember is, and it's something that I try to say quite a bit, but sometimes I don't think I've been saying it recently, blessings precedes obedience. In other words, blessings come after obedience. It's about obedience. That's what God really wants from us. Mm-hmm. And we focus on, the 10 cities and the 5 cities or what. No, worry about the obedience. Being obedient. So if it is, I took the 1 and made it into 5, as long as I was obedient. Now, I always wonder, why didn't the king in the parable say, well done to the one who did 5? Maybe Jesus didn't just say it then. I mean, it's just one of those of, again, you can read into or read more into a parable than you can just about anything in the book.
Yes.
Because, we don't overinterpret it. Keep it simple. All right, we've been given the gospel. Let's make much of it. And let's be faithful and make sure the next generation has it and that we pass a baton that we give them a lead.
Yeah.
And right now we're behind.
I saw the silliest thing on Facebook the other day that the new scientific discovery suggests that at one point the entire Earth was covered with water, even as high as Mount Everest.
You know not.
And I just thought, really? And of course, this was like 4 billion years ago that they figured this out. But I'm sitting there thinking, your narrative is starting to sound an awful lot more like ours.
Yeah. And I think it's one of, and we I love what Kenny says, and I don't need science to prove it's real. At the same time, it's going to prove it's real, or it happened.
I think it's hilarious weren't you guys the same ones that a couple weeks ago or a couple years ago said it was impossible to have the entire Earth covered, and now you're changing? How many more steps you got to take our way before you finally realize maybe you're wrong?
That's exactly right.
I think a lot of that's
ego. It's a lot of water, though. Man, it's a lot of water.
It's a lot of water.
They have a lot of ego because they want to be right.
The funny thing about it is their explanation is even that it happened from the tectonic plate shifting and water being released from below.
Right.
It's like, that's in there too.
Yeah, exactly. Wow.
Turning it. Recess the other day, she was studying for science, and one of her flashcards said something about God. I can't remember what it was. And Gabe said, "I thought you were doing science. I thought this was." And I said, "Well, yeah." I said,
"What's God got to do with science?"
The cool thing is that Hilltop Christian, science and God actually are in the same book.
Well, yeah, God created. And you're coming from a theistic worldview of, okay, God created, and I believe God created in 6 days. I don't believe it was six geological periods. You know, I don't believe there was a gap period to make up for the billions, although... if somebody wants to believe that, have at it. I just believe that. I believe a flood of that proportion would mess up a lot of stuff.
Yeah,
and make things a lot different than what it is.
Have we talked about the rub that I have with the dark energy and the dark matter and that whole thing?
We have.
Yeah, but it's just quick. Kind of goes with that. It's so annoying to me that, especially here lately, as this new telescope has shown scientists that they've blown up the Big Bang model and they're having to invent new stuff, new variables to make it work.
Oh, right.
And basically what they've come up with is that this thing, dark energy or dark matter, I get them confused.
Right.
It's basically something that we absolutely cannot measure. We have no proof of it existing whatsoever, but we know it must exist because that's the only thing that could make these things possible. And I'm thinking...
Golly.
Literally.
You're going out of your way.
Yes. You're just giving
to
it.
Try to write off God.
Yeah. But you're telling us that we're crazy for believing in God.
Yep.
And you're basically.
But you got some dark matter thing that nobody's ever seen.
You have no evidence of it whatsoever, except it must exist. Otherwise, this couldn't have happened.
Well, it's just going to show you that people are going to believe whatever they want to believe. They don't want to believe that.
And sometimes they ain't got to make sense.
Yes, it does. None of it really makes sense, but
but
this was written many years ago, and it talks about the Earth being round, a ball out in the middle of nowhere. Job talks about that.
Mm-hmm.
Earth hangeth on nothing because there's nothing for it to hang on.
Well, the reason that I even
for years and years, and we didn't know it was a ball until we got out of outer space. It was right there. So, no, I'm not saying the Bible's a science book textbook.
No, nobody
but when it does speak is correct.
The reason I even bring it up in this context is that there's in that responsibility that we have with the gospel, it's the rest of the world thinks that our views are so, crazy and mysterious and far off the reservation because they haven't even taken the time to read what is actually in the book and what we actually do believe. And it is our responsibility to... I don't want to say to bridge that gap. It's not bridging the gap exactly, but it's giving them opportunities to see the truth.
To share it. Share the truth, to talk to truth, to live the truth so that they can see it. I mean, but let's face facts. I mean, from a, I don't want to say postmodern, but from a scientific mind, the whole premise of our whole existence, the whole premise of my salvation is that a man raised from the dead.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so if I've already got that's impossible. That's you can understand that, ours it makes perfect sense, why, and everything else at the same time. I still got to get to that place to where I can believe by faith that God raised him from the dead.
Yeah.
Now, I've got past that to where, I believe by faith God created. They're all kind of interrelated at the same time. Mm-hmm. That central point of, did Christ die? Okay, I can believe that because Rome had a propensity for killing people on a cross.
Yeah.
I can believe that. But was he who he says he was, and did he rise from the grave?
Yeah.
And that is kind of you're asking me to believe a lot there. I mean, let's just face facts. I mean, that's a... here's the thing. Never seen it.
Well, somebody has. It's ABCAD.
Well, but that's also why Jesus said, blessed are those who haven't seen and believe to Thomas.
No, I think there's enough evidence outside the Bible that... obviously Jesus rose from...
Isn't. What I'm saying is you got to, for if you're a common sense lost person, that's a tough one you got to stop and think about it. That's a big one to overcome.
But is it? I mean, they overcome Julius Caesar.
Ain't told me Julius Caesar raised from the dead.
Yeah, but was there one?
Sure there was.
How do you know?
Oh, I know. Same reason. I'm not saying that Jesus didn't exist. You got to think about it. He raised from the dead. That's the whole... I mean, let's face facts. If Jesus doesn't raise from the dead, what's my hope built on? And so now I've got to trust, and I do, I'm not arguing against it. Believe me, my whole doctoral process has been the resurrection. I'm just saying it just all of a sudden it hit me of, you know, to the average person just walking down the street, that if I didn't buy into miracles, I didn't buy into, you know, I'm just a normal 21st century lost person. I got to get to that. And I may be overstating.
I either, because I've never been in that realm of
right under not. I mean,
see, I don't know how a non-Christian
thinks.
Operates or right. thinks. I would, like I've said before, I would think, this is coming from a Christian perspective, the older I get, the more I want to be prepared.
Right,
time is running out. No.
But I don't see that. I mean, for a scientific-minded person, you grew up. Pick a school, MIT. You went to MIT. You are Mr. Science. You are Mr. Number Crunching / you know the scientific notation in your sleep. You know you can name 17 digits of pi. Mm-hmm. You are that kind of smart nerd. Mm-hmm. But everything is explainable. That you got to figure that's got to be a tough nut to crack.
And it is.
Yeah.
It is, because that's so much. I think it's so much pride into.
It's pride. It's several other things.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
But here's what I'm saying. That's where faith has to come in.
It can be cracked.
Right.
That's where faith has to come in. Yes.
That you are believing what, you know.
Wow. And a lot of times faith don't come in until you need help.
Sometimes.
Most of the Christian people that I've seen that have gotten saved older, they needed help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and it's oftentimes in a crisis is when you're going to look up.
Yeah. When everything's going fine, I don't know if I need God.
When my bacon is in the grease.
Yeah.
And my bacon is in the fire, I'm looking for somebody to pull me out of this thing, because I can't jump out.
Well, yeah, but I want to just my submit for your consideration.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. So, put a shirt on when you say that.
Yeah. I don't have shirt one on.
Well, he's got in there. Go put your shirt on. Come in here then.
Growing up in church, knowing the Bible, yes, we grew up around it. That being said, we're still human. And yes, it's a tall order to believe a man came back from the dead. I get that.
Right.
And I would say that sometimes we just believe because we know we better believe. Now, is that really believing? even if you have that question, right. Is this really possible? Then we're real quick, just squash that. I don't want to think about that. I'm not going to think because we know better than to go there. Well, that's not exactly believing either. Just believing because I know I better believe.
Right.
What I've kind of started to see from reading the Bible and just understanding God's character more and more and more is I'm not saying it to argue that that's not the point that you have to get to. Yeah, you have to get to that point. But for me, I think I find it much easier to get to that point when I nail down the fact that, well, yeah, he created life. He can certainly give it back to something that lost it. What's the big deal about that? If he can make us and all of these things, why can't he bring something back to the dead?
Certainly I have a friend that would argue the same point to say, well, creation this way. If you can help people to realize he created, then a virgin can give birth.
Yeah.
Then a man can come back from the dead. Then a man can feed 5,000. Then God can stop the lions from eating Daniel. That's creation is the big part too of that.
So, it is, because I think creation, and here's, I'm not arguing 6,000 years, 6 billion years. That to me is not, I know that we've talked about it before, and it's not necessarily, you know, a salvation issue.
For some people it might be.
I think that my answer had always probably been, I don't really care so much. But I do tend to lean more and more and more towards the 6,000 as I get to know this whole thing more, because I start to realize there's no real good evidence for anything else.
Well, and it's one of those, to me, it really does. I want to know, well, what has God done, whether it's all those billions of years or those 6,000?
Well, because he was around 15 billion years ago, or 100 billion. If he's eternal, then he was around before the invention of time. So what
before
there
was years.
Right, exactly. So it's not like he wasn't in existence 7,000 years ago.
Right.
So for me, though, I find it easier, because once you know, can he
raise somebody from the dead? Well, if you believe that he can have a virgin give birth, well, how do I know that? Well, how do I know that he does it? If you take it back far enough to the point where you say, well, somebody made all this.
Yeah. Okay. Well, if he can make the sun
and if he can make all this.
Yep.
And make our bodies working
and
like
he controls nature.
And, yeah.
That he can make a sun stand still in the day so that Israel can win the battle. Then he can do those things.
I think I heard a stat the other day. If there's something like more atoms and a drop of water than there are stars in the universe or some right. crazy thing like that. I don't know if that's true or not. But whatever it is, I'm sure it's true. I just don't know if I'm quoting it right.
Well, it just goes, yeah.
But if
the minute and the magna.
Yeah. Mm. There's complexities all around us that are far beyond our understanding. So it's just once you get to a point where you're willing to submit to a higher power and right. that there is something greater than you in the world and that there's something out there that's in control of everything, well, then why can't that thing raise its son from the dead? Why can't that thing conceive a child in a virgin? I mean,
sure.
It's not that hard when you think of it.
No, it's just one of, I don't know why that struck me as, man, you know, to the common sense mind, a person rising from the dead.
And I agree,
know.
Yeah.
I mean, I've done over, I don't know, 100 funerals in my life. I had never seen one rise up. I've had to unbury one and bury it again, but I've never had to, never seen one rise again. They just put him in the wrong hole.
Well, I don't even know if they're at that point of believing.
Right. Well, I mean, to get to that point, that's all I'm talking about.
What I see out here, I see a dying world. They
sure.
just don't even care.
Or even thought or considered it?
Consider that they're not going to be here, you know. Few more years and we'll all be gone.
Or consider right? that they got to give an accountability yeah. for their life.
Yeah. I mean, in the South, we're known for going to church. That's nice, but that's not. I know a lot of people that never went to church.
I think you want to change your tense there. We were known.
Yeah.
You know, well.
But it's still,
mind,
a lot of it is still.
I mean, that's what the perception was.
Yeah.
But there wasn't a lot of people that going. I mean, there was a lot, but there wasn't as many. The people from the north or from not around here think everybody, and that's not true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've got our own problems too. There's a lot of people that I know that never stepped a foot, you know, been in the church at all.
Yeah. Well, I think that is the thing that now is the what they're finding is more and more people are referring to themselves as non. Mm-hmm. And they don't have any religion, any background. Yeah. Many of them have never set foot in a church. Many of them have, I don't know that they'd be able to tell you, 2 books of the Bible, much less 66. That there's a Bible, yes, but they have not done any kind of investigating, really. Just kind of, no, I'm non-religious. And I dare say that's getting close to about 30 to 40% of the population of the United States was the last I saw.
Of 40% that had some knowledge.
They're calling themselves non. They may have
okay.
But they
that's
basically
right.
have no affiliation, no
yeah.
preference, and probably had no experience with it.
Yeah, I don't even know if we've ever been a Christian nation. Not in my lifetime.
No, I don't like that term.
I don't think that's true.
Yeah.
Savannah. I think, you know, one of the 13 colonies, Savannah. I do know this because I've been down there. That was actually settled by a bunch of murderers to get out of prison.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they didn't come over here for freedom of religion. They came over here.
Well, and I think
get out of
jail. I think England sent some of its dregs.
Yeah.
Let's help clean out some of the prisons. We'll send them to America.
Yeah.
But I do think do I think that our country was based on some of the godly principles of the scriptures?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. But as far as calling us a Christian nation, I think we have aspects of it, but I just have never. I've always buckled at that.
One of the things that I think if you're, I don't want to say looking for proof, but one of the things that reinforces, I think, my faith maybe a little bit is when you hear some of Jesus' words, especially about they'll hate you because of your love for me, you fast forward that 2,000 years,
mm-hmm.
and I think of how spot-on accurate that is. In today, I mean, you've got all the other religions in the world, all the other lifestyles in the world, everything else in the world. If you do dare attack them, then you're evil.
Yeah.
But Christianity is absolutely fair game, 100% across the board. That was
I don't know, I don't want to go so far as to submit that for your consideration, that that was one of his most prophetic statements. But it was a big one. I mean, he was spot on that at the time that he had 12 followers,
right?
I mean, he had a lot of the people following him and believing in his teachings at that point, but that wasn't... I think I hear that now, and I think, oh, yeah, that makes total sense. Of course he knew. You know, that would have made total sense in those days, too. In the grant, he didn't have... How, I don't know if this is the right way of saying it, how famous was Jesus? I mean, how, at the time he was alive, how many people... I know he was a well-known figure, obviously, but...
Well, he wasn't worldwide.
It wasn't worldwide, and I mean, it was really probably his resurrection.
I don't know if he ever got 30 miles, other than when he went to Egypt.
Right.
As a little baby, away from his home base.
Well, I didn't even know he existed until much later.
Until much later in his life, and when they were kind of forced into the middle of it. So I mean, it was...
It was localized, I mean... Rome itself didn't even know who he was.
No. Yeah. I doubt Caesar Augustus or any of those knew anything about him.
At the time of his death, not resurrection, at the time of his death, how many people do you think read the article in the Jerusalem Gazette or whatever that, you know, Christ has been crucified? I mean, was it even a big deal that he was killed?
I would think so.
Yeah, that was in Jerusalem.
In Jerusalem.
It would have been a big deal. Yeah, yes, absolutely.
Well, especially considering the chief priests and the Pharisees and all the run-ins they had had. Again, you got to keep in mind, it ain't like it is today. We got a 24-hour news cycle.
Yeah.
I mean, I can go and watch, you know, all the hearings right now if I wanted to. Mm-hmm. We get instantaneous. Well, word had to travel.
Yeah, they got
but at the same time, I guarantee you word was traveling about this itinerant pastor or itinerant preacher that was going from synagogue to synagogue that made the Pharisees look foolish and answered all their questions and, you know, taught as one with authority. And you have it where people are following him. You know, whether it's he's John 6 and he's got a multitude of folks finding him and they got to feed him. You know, it's popularity would have been for that time off the charts. I mean, 5,000 men show up to hear you teach and eat your fish and your fish sandwiches. That's 5,000 men. Mm-hmm. Throw in the women and children, you're probably looking more like 10 to 15.
And they wanted to make him king.
Sure they did.
Oh, after that being, I don't have to work anymore.
So even at that time, he was one of the most controversial figures of history, even at that time. He would have probably still been considered
controversial in the fact of he's questioning the authority of the leadership.
Yeah. Sure. But for him, even at that time, to say they'll hate you because of your love for me, that's as true or more true today as it was. I mean, we're not being crucified here. We are being, I mean, there are Christians being martyred all over the world.
That's crazy.
So let me ask you this. So why do you think that? Not just because Jesus said it. That makes it true, all right?
Yeah.
So I give you that. We'll take that one off. That's the obvious answer. Jesus said so.
Yeah.
So why is it?
Well, I think one thing, if they hate him, they hate us.
Okay, I give you that.
I
think there's something else.
I think it's back to our... We're a fallen people in a fallen world, and the darkness hates light. I mean, evil's going to hate good.
That's on it. You're exactly right. You're dead on it. Anything else you want to add to that?
Yeah, I was going to say, we live in a satanic world.
You're both right on it. Yeah, I mean, you both nailed it. And I think the way I would put it is this. Why Satan needed to attack a lie?
Mm-hmm.
He's going to attack the truth because he hates the truth. Why do I need to attack a lie? I mean, I can just, you know, as long as we're accepting of all religions, that's great. But I don't need to attack that as long as we're all accepting. But now that one right there, that no man comes to the Father except through me, that totally isolates Christianity. We're different. That there's only one way to salvation. Not by works, not by terrorist acts, not by, the Buddhists wanting to get one with the world. It is by Christ. And the enemy hates the truth.
But all worlds leads to heaven. Hmm? All
roads lead to God. I'll give you that.
Exactly.
But that's you ain't going to stay there or not.
I know. That's
but all roads lead to God. I'll give you that. I've had people say that, and I said, you're exactly right.
Well, that's what a lot of people believe.
One's going to lead to getting past that and him letting you in.
All religions lead to the same place.
Yep. And that's a lie from the pit of heaven, pit of hell.
Right.
And that is, again, the enemy attacking the truth.
I mean, that's what I hear.
Yep.
I see the bumper sticker.
All right.
Mm. I like that as a, I like your counterpoint to it. Yeah, I'll lead to God. I'll give you that.
I'll give you that. I'll argue that all day long.
Isn't it almost, in a way, though, I don't want to encourage. I mean, in the parts of the Bible where it talks about rejoicing and persecution and things like that, I mean, I think that's how you, that's in a way, when you are persecuted for that belief, it is reinforcing evidence. There you go, that we are, that he is good, and that's why it's being attacked, is because evil hates good.
Well, I mean, you see it in Peter and John, after they were arrested and they were beaten, they went back and they were rejoicing. Well, if I just got a beating, I don't know that I'd be rejoicing. Well, yeah, you have to know why they were rejoicing.
Yeah.
That they were worthy mm-hmm. to be counted, worthy of the name to suffer.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and everything that he had told them, we know it's true.
Yeah.
And now it's just backing up what they had seen and heard.
Yeah.
Question I got for you is this. Besides the fruit of the Spirit, which that's always the answer I always get, what are some marks of, and, well, that's the fruit of the Spirit. What are some marks of a maturing Christian? So take out love, joy, peace, patience, kindness,
goodness, gentleness. Oh, you got word?
I think those are going to be actions. What are some other ones? The reason I asked that is yesterday I was preparing for a video series we're going to do in Psalms. Well, while I was in the Psalms, I said, let's have some fun in Proverbs, too, because that may be one that we do eventually, is we'll go from Psalms to the Proverbs and do kind of that, kind of famous sayings.
What are some of the actions?
Or how to live life. Yeah, what are some things that should be in our life? What are some things that characterize, if you will?
Besides the fruit of the Spirit.
Take out the fruit of the Spirit.
Well, I would say one thing would be, and I'm not saying loving others, but not judging others based on our criteria.
So you learn how to walk more in grace and how to be responsive to the grace that God has shown me, I'll show to others. Okay.
Is that on there? Is that one of the answers?
I like it.
Okay. All right.
That's not what I was looking for, but I agree with you.
Oh, man. I thought
you ought to pat yourself on the back. It's just not in this text.
Well, you're at a text.
I am. I'm going to get to a text.
Okay.
I
know where you're at. So
Proverbs 1.
I haven't read Proverbs.
Trust
in the Lord.
Trust.
Yeah.
That's going to be mine.
Yep.
All the way. That's in Proverbs 3. I want you to know that.
But Proverbs 1:7. You know that one? You memorized that one?
No, I've only gotten to 6.
So here we go. I shared this with the staff this morning.
Oh, right.
And yeah, if I had to call it this passage something, I would call it the ing, the inging of maturity.
Let me see.
The growing of maturity. And here it is. I think that we should be knowing him, and that's verse 2, to know wisdom and instruction. Well, Colossians says that in Christ are hidden all the secrets of wisdom. So to know wisdom.
What verse?
Chapter 1.
Oh, chapter 1.
Uh-huh.
I thought you said
verse 2.
Verse 2.
There you go. So we need to be knowing. Mm-hmm. I think we need to be learning. Look at verse 3. To receive instruction in wise behavior, righteousness, justice, and equity. Well, my goodness, there's 3 right there. Think about what is it Micah 6:8 says, that he, hear, old man, what the Lord requires of you. And so you got to be knowing, you got to be learning. I believe verse 4, you're going to have growing. Look at verse 4 and 5. To give prudence to the naive. Well, I was naive, now I'm prudent. Youth, I was young in my walk, now I'm beginning to grow up and get knowledge and discretion. A wise man will hear and increase in learning. So we got to be a learning man, a growing man. Verse 6, an understanding man. And that's where I was talking about with you. To understand a proverb, to understand why we don't judge so harshly and why we are patient with others.
Fear the Lord.
Nope. And fearing is the last one. A fearing man, verse 7. You got one.
I got one.
Because you read ahead. And here we go. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. So now let's bring this full circle to where we started with 2 kinds of fears. There's one that compels us, and there's one that cripples us. The fear of the Lord is going to compel you to be, to love, to care, to minister, to be all that he's called us to be. So I just wanted to share that.
I like that. But Do I get some credit? Because I was only two chapters away from it.
Well, you were in Proverbs 3 for a while, and then I had to turn the page for you.
I got to 5. I was only two chapters away from what you were talking about.
Well, what cracked me up is when you said, what verse? I was like...
Kenny's philosophy is if I give you enough answers, we'll edit out the ones that were wrong, and I'll be right.
I'll get there. So just a little encouragement of, hey, what should my life be filled with? Well, how about knowing and learning and growing and understanding and fearing God? That really is going to be a picture of, hey, someone who is really growing. Yes, it'll show itself with love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, self-control, faithfulness, all those. But this is kind of the behind the scenes. When we're doing this, that's when the other will show up.
Fearing God and trusting God all kind of come from knowing God and knowing who He is. Trusting Him because you know His goodness.
So
fearing Him
two.
Because you know of His power and what He's and what He's capable of.
So really, and I think if you jump into it, and I think you're right. Verse 2, verse 3, verse 4, verse 5, verse 6 all roll into verse 7.
Yeah.
So when you know Him and you're learning from Him and you're growing in it and you understand it, yeah, then you're going to fear the Lord.
Yeah.
In a good way.
Well, and that is, and I think that's why it says, that's the beginning of wisdom or beginning of knowledge.
And I think this is, I don't know if this is quite the way I would, we've used this word a few times, but it's from the process of verses 2, 3, 4 that you receive that knowledge and that instruction. And that's, to me, the difference. The fear from me has probably come from experiencing the Lord versus knowing the Lord.
Right.
Knowing of and knowing what He said and knowing some that starts to build into experiencing Him and experiencing the fact that, yeah, everything He said's spot on. And,
right.
And you start to experience that, yeah, He's right. But
what you're doing is taking the Scriptures to your experiences.
Right, right.
And where if you don't have the Scriptures, then all you're doing is basing it on experiences.
Right.
And if you I'm going to base my view of God on my experiences, you might have a tough time there.
Definitely will.
I'm talking about experiencing God in your life, having Him in.
Or just knowing.
And knowing Him on that level that you don't get to know if you don't let Him teach you. I mean, you gotta let Him guide you to get to know that, hey, He's right, I don't know. Anyway, always fun, guys.
Oh, man. That was a good time today, man. I enjoyed that.
Shortest
hour of the week.
Bye, y'all.
You having a glass emergency today?
I need them. I just put them in.
Oh, okay. Hey, don't put them on. I put them in.
You've got spectacles there.
Oh, I see what happened. Your little silicone. Yeah. All right, that sounds good.
Well, I'll just use this.
So you just pop it in as you need.
Monocle, Mr. Peanut. But I had people text me Friday night. What do you think about church? And I said, let it snow first. I mean, nothing had even started falling. And I was like, well, let's see what comes down.
They're preparing.
When was this revealed?
Was this your...
Just messing around yesterday.
Okay, nice.
Thank you. Tell y'all about something when we turned it off.